Please listen carefully as our menus have recently changed. Welcome to Junk Connoisseurs with Jordan, Alan, and Alex, where we're going to talk about a vehicle tonight or a platform. The other two don't know what it is, and I've got something in my pocket here we're going to talk about. All right, well, we ready to talk about something different. I will give you a couple of hints here. None of us have owned one.
Oh.
That really opens it up, doesn't it?
That's probably not American.
You guys know my trifecta of what makes me interested in a car. Rear-wheel drive.
V8.
Standard transmission. V8.
Yep.
And two out of three ain't bad.
Sure.
This vehicle doesn't even have two out of three.
Uh-huh.
But it is objectively cool. You guys will agree to it.
Front-wheel drive, manual, four and six cylinder.
Would be my guess.
Yes, those are going to be.
Unless it's real weird and it was not available with the manual and it's rear-wheel drive. But then.
But it's only going to be V6 then. Yeah. So it everything that qualifies that I'm aware of that's particularly American would have a V8.
I'm going to mislead you guys a little bit here.
It's not something that you tell us when you do it.
Because I'm going to tell you, it was only available in black and it had forced induction.
It is the Buick Grand National.
Told you I was going to mislead you, and mislead you I did.
Ah!
Forced induction, only available in black, and it was the vehicle to have if you wanted to win a drag race against a Ferrari 348 TS on the way to the Home Depot or wherever the hardware store, and wanted to bring back bags of mulch after. Back in 1991 is when it was launched. GMC jumped the shark in Happy Days terminology, and I probably use this phrase way too much, but they answered a question nobody asked. And I think we're all very happy they did.
I think that's fair.
So the 91 GMC Cyclone, spelled with an S instead of a C, as they say, for a single slice of this forced induction.
Upgrade is going to be pissed.
The 1991 GMC S15 Sonoma, they built a Cyclone, which was, as you guys probably are already aware, this was the 4.3 with a turbocharger and all-wheel drive. Now, there's some cliche facts I'm going to throw out here that you hear every time we have a conversation about these, and one of them was that it beat a Ferrari 248 TS in acceleration, both 0 to 60 and in the quarter mile, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about a 348 TS Ferrari, but apparently they weren't as fast as a Cyclone. And evidently, they were the fastest production pickup truck for like 30 years. They held that title somewhere in that neighborhood. Well, I didn't know a whole lot about these, really. And it's funny because, going to talk about the Cyclone. That's kind of how I build this. The Typhoon obviously goes hand in hand with it. And the Typhoon was the SUV version, the GMC Jimmy.
Yeah, that came like the next year, didn't it?
Yes, in 92 and 93.
They spelled it correctly, though.
They did spell it correctly. The whole, apparently.
Well, how would you misspell Typhoon?
With an T-Y-F-O-N.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
Like S-Y-C-L-O-N-E looks good? Yeah. I mean, it's like.
Yeah. I feel like the F is worse than the S.
Because
anyway.
Mercury or somebody had a cyclone. I think that's what I heard.
Oh, Mercury did have a cyclone.
That's what it gets mentioned. I'll give credit to when I was looking into this, I didn't know a whole lot about them. My familiarity with them was basically back in my high school and college years, which would have been the 90s. And these things were kind of infamous at the time. And I really have only seen them in person, either on the street or at a drag strip or an autocross. And that, you know, people that want to race these things, they're people that buy these things are interested in drag racing and autocross and that sort of stuff. So that's where I would have seen them. But I actually learned quite a bit by looking into these. And there's a couple of good videos out there. One's by Haggerty.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Leno has one of these, and there's a Jay Leno garage. So get on YouTube and find those. There's a couple of really good videos. Of course, I looked at Wikipedia and that sort of stuff. But there's a lot of these facts that get thrown around, and some of them vary by a little bit, and I'm not going to sweat the details on that too much. But how this came about is, according to the Haggerty video, Kim Nielsen, the guy that was involved in some way with the Grand National, decided we needed this little truck with the Buick 3.8, but the Buick 3.8 wasn't going to get produced anymore. So
I'm assuming you're referring to the 3.8,
the turbocharger.
Yes. Sorry. Cause they were switching to the 60 degree. Series one at that point.
And I don't know how all this went down, but anyway, apparently this guy went to GM and they're like, it would cost too much to do this, develop it. And he said, okay, I've got an idea. And he went outside and he talked to ASC McLaren and Production Automotive Services. And ASC built, I believe, a turbocharged version, a prototype with rear-wheel drive. When PAS came back with their concept, it was all-wheel drive. They took ultimately what became the Cyclone. GMC worked with PAS and they shipped them engines and they did a bunch of rework to the actual engines themselves, rotating assemblies. They got special pistons. Evidently, the main bearing caps were different, like nodular iron. I don't know. Different intake manifold, different, obviously. Different exhaust manifolds. They got a plethora of different parts. They actually worked these engines over. It wasn't just a standard one. It was, you know, hyper-eutectic, probably dished pistons. I'm assuming they lowered the, if they're going to take them apart, they might as well build them for forced induction. Then they used a water-to-air intercooler, ran 14 or 15 PSI of boost, depending on who you talk to, and used a higher stall torque converter than standard, and put it through a 700 R4 four-speed overdrive transmission. And but the key to the all-wheel drive was they used the transfer case that was being used in the Astrovan and Safari. It was also used in the Bravada. Later. So you roll your own Cyclone these days. You go out and find a rolled over Bravada or something like that, or all wheel drive Astro or Safari. But the Bravadas were kind of less valuable and probably more prevalent than all wheel drive. Yeah.
So, I think they sold more of that than the all wheel drive Astro.
But the key to the all wheel drive was the transfer case. They used the BorgWarner 4472. Most sources say that was the number, which split the torque 60% to the rear, 30% to the front, and then there was 10% left over that it could live off interest in Costa Rica. So anyway, 65-35. Yeah. the all-wheel drive transfer case, it split it, you know, 60 rear, 30 front. They also had a limited slip differential, and that's how you get a little pickup truck with too much horsepower to hook up. And when I say too much horsepower, they put out 280 horsepower.
Woo! So 350
to 360 pound-feet of torque. So, I mean, this thing really, for 1991, this thing was putting out some...
That was very hot for the early 90s.
Yeah, and it was putting it to all four wheels, so...
Right. So, 1991 Mustang would have been 215?
225,
somewhere around there. So the Camaro was still the third gen.
Yeah.
And the 350 wasn't available with the manual.
Right.
So I think that was like a tune port, wasn't it? The Camaro?
Yeah, I think not L82, L98 maybe.
But still, we're talking mid-200s.
Yeah.
So a 280 horsepower all-wheel drive V6 pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
So I poked, and the Ferrari, by today's measuring standard, is a very poor performer.
But I don't put a whole lot of stock in it. It just comes up in every conversation.
The Ferrari 348 TS had a 0-60 of 6 seconds. It ran the quarter mile in, I think it was 15 something. Like,
ooh, ouch.
Yeah, no, it made 298 horsepower or 296 horsepower. Well, it was a 3.5 liter V8. So, like, you had to wind it out to get it to move.
Yeah.
14 and a half second quarter mile. Yeah. So, as we're going to get into.
Well, yeah. So you said 14 and a half seconds.
Yes.
So the quarter mile time on the Cyclone was 13.4 at 98 miles per hour.
That's smoking.
That's pretty darn quick.
It seems like a low trap speed for 13 and a half. 13.4. Yeah, I mean, I would be expecting, like, I mean, that's fast, but I would be expecting, I mean, it's also got the aerodynamics of a barn door. So
yeah. That seems about right to me. 0 to 60 speed of, or time, 0 to 60, 4.6 seconds, which apparently was equal to the ZR1 Corvette.
That's about as fast as they got in that time.
Yeah. This episode brought to you by
eBay Headers. All of the burned spark plug wires and ugly chrome of regular headers, but cheaper.
Oh, wow. So I looked up the 1999, I believe, and I think there was a revision on this, but the first supercharged Ford Lightning did a 14.3. In the quarter. So this was almost a second faster.
I'm surprised.
But it trapped 99 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, so you're thinking of rear wheel drive. This is all wheel drive. Mm-hmm. So it's going to get out of the hole.
I've always said the fastest vehicle I've had that I've ever owned for the first 20 feet was my 93 Grand Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a V8 all wheel drive.
Torque and all wheel drive.
You brake, power brake it, get the, you know, rev it up to about 2200, get the converter to flash, light turns green, just stand on it. And for the first 20 feet, you would think you were in something serious.
Sure.
And then you'd get across the intersection and be like, okay, don't do that again.
This was a 4.3 and they only revved to like 4,600, 4,700 RPM. Maybe it wasn't even that much. Apparently, one of the comments in one of the videos that I mentioned was that they wouldn't even get to their own red line all the time. It literally would shift. It was governed to shift earlier than that, but it was,
wow.
They were a freight train apparently. And I haven't seen a video where anybody was disappointed with the performance even here, you know, 30 years in the future.
Oh, sure. Even by today's standards, those are respectable numbers.
Mm-hmm. Those are respectable numbers for a hot rod, much less a truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a functional truck if you needed it to be.
Yeah, they say they rated it for 500 pounds payload capacity, which was not something a lot of people were happy about, I guess. But really, you know what you're getting when you buy. I mean, this is.
I'm willing to bet that has more to do with tires than anything else.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was the first pickup truck with four-wheel anti-lock brakes.
Ah, cool.
Drum brakes in the rear.
Anti-lock drum brakes.
Yes. Just with this thing, you'd think as far as they went with it, they could have just given us some disc brakes all around, but it didn't need it. I mean, it doesn't have any weight back there, whatever. It's fine. They were more focused, I think, on the go fast than the slow down.
I've also heard that you get into this after a while, you get heat soak in the intercooler, and they're good for a couple of passes, and then they slow down quite a bit.
There was one theory that there were some differences in different test results by the different, you know, publications and that sort of thing. And I think it came out that the fastest of these times that were recorded, you know, they were icing down the intercooler beforehand, something you do at a drag strip.
You do at a drag strip,
but not for,
not on your way to Walmart. So for real world numbers.
Yeah. Those kind of things. There's some rumors about that. It doesn't really matter.
No.
Everybody, it's not like the truck was a slouch. Everybody liked it.
The funny thing is Alan had just mentioned it, you know, that's not what you would do on your way to Walmart. Mm-hmm. And my first thought, the logical human being,
they still ice at Walmart.
On
your way to Walmart to get the ice. Why don't ice down the intercooler?
Why would you be drag racing on the way to Walmart? And my immediate second thought was, oh, it's because there's stoplights in the way between Walmart and my house. So, of course, every stoplight is a drag race.
Exactly. When you're driving one of these, I think it probably is.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, they were not quiet. And there's something, you know, when you drive something that looks fast, even if it's not fast, every schmuck with any kind of aspiration, whether he thinks he can beat you or not, is revving at the light and it's like, oh yeah, what you got? I'm just trying to go get ice for my intercooler so I can actually race people.
Well, these things look, they did look fast. I think they look great. Yeah. They were a good looking little pickup truck.
No, they did a good job on the exterior.
Yeah. They did require 93 octane gasoline
off a lot of people.
Forced induction. And apparently, again, back to the magazine tests and stuff like that, one of them wasn't as fast and as good while they were out on, apparently on the West Coast. They didn't have 93 octane gasoline. So they ran 91 and it probably pulled timing.
A lot of stuff does that.
Again, one rumor or one thing in one of the videos that I watched.
Well, and also we're talking about rudimentary 80s design GM electronics. So if it could tell what fuel was going into it, it's probably not going to adjust well. It's just going to go to full safe.
I'd imagine it's just as soon as it got any detonation, because that'll kill you in a forced induction mode instantly. So I'd imagine it just yanked timing as soon as it got any knock.
Well, I think this is an interesting combination, this vehicle, of parts bin engineering and outside sources, upfitters, the PAS. So, they used a lot of parts that were common through the other platforms. Apparently the boost gauge, the gauge cluster came out of like a Pontiac Sunbird or something that had a boost gauge in it.
It's the only first generation S10 or S15 where you could actually get a tach.
Yeah.
Because everything else just had the little ribbon speedometer and the shift light that came on at 12 RPM. Mm-hmm. Like, shift up now. No!
the most 80s speedometer I recall from my childhood. Right. I'm sure there's ones that are more egregious offenders. I just remember getting into a friend's like square body blazer and being like, what the hell is that? Looks like something from Star Trek.
Yes. Yes. Well, they used the gauge cluster out of a Pontiac Sunfire or Sunbird. I don't even which one it was. The 700 R4 transmission apparently had a Corvette style shifter. I don't know if it was literally out of a Corvette or not.
I mean, it probably was.
Used the transfer case out of the Astro and Safari all-wheel drive vans. They didn't do a whole lot with the interior besides some nicer seats, I think
the seats made out of shifter.
They had some bolstering, and I know that they had, I think they had like the little
logo picked out.
Yeah.
I mean, they were nice, but it was a neat combination of, again, the parts bin, just throw the parts bin at it. And I'm sure that was, they used the throttle body off of a V8. That it must've been off of the tune ports and the Corvettes and the Camaros. But, it was a neat deal. And then they apparently worked over the engines internally as well. Used a water to air intercooler.
Water? You mean like out the toilet?
Which is not something you see in many production vehicles. In 1991 that I'm aware of.
No.
A lot of things just didn't have intercoolers before then.
Yeah. I mean, and if they were intercooled, they were air to air.
Yeah.
Because that was cheaper, easier, and also less. A little less prone to heat soak, I think. You should maybe.
All of that depends on like airflow and design.
How you get the air.
For the purpose of this discussion, I brought it up as the Cyclone, but the Typhoon, the SUV version, was also out there. They only made the Cyclone in 1991, about 3,000 of them, and then for whatever reason, they stopped building the Cyclone. And started building for another 2 years, 92 and 93, they built the Typhoon, the SUV version, which had very similar performance. It was probably a little heavier. And it was a really cool vehicle or very cool little truck that I never really got to know. I knew of them and everybody kind of knows of them, but it was fun to take a little bit deeper dive into it and kind of find out more about them and what the actual story, as much as you can tell now, 30 years later, what the actual story behind it
was.
But another little side note is after the Cyclone was kind of killed off, then they decided to build some Sonoma GTs with similar appearance package, but without the turbocharger. And they look neat, but they were,
when they do that.
But a lot of people probably really liked the way they looked and didn't care about that. Or the Cyclone was a 1 year thing, but the whole run of Cyclones and Typhoons was a 3 year thing.
Junk Connoisseurs, brought to you by
Brondo Thirst Mutilator. It's got electrolytes.
could any of us justify spending $25,000 to $30,000 on a Cyclone?
I mean, if I had at this point, it would be an investment, and cars are a shitty investment. But these would probably continue to appreciate.
That's fair.
So apparently, and this both Jay Leno on his video and the Haggerty video said these things were as near as makes no difference, $25,000 when they were new, which comes out to double 50-ish. That in today's in today's dollars.
Which realistically, if any manufacturer produced a midsize pickup truck with the intent of being performance oriented for 50 grand, they could not make them fast enough.
Right. Right now they couldn't. You're right. If this was new,
they can't make them fast enough right now. Anyway,
but this would, this would not be midsize. It would be full size. It would be a crew cab. It would have a 3.5 foot bed.
It would
have every Yuga and sensor you could add to it.
Yeah. And it would be 90 grand.
Yeah.
Or more. Yeah. Well, it'd be 90 sticker and 130 after dealer markups.
In the time that they were built, they cost more than the 454 SS that Chevrolet made at the time, which could do conceivably truck stuff. It was not as fast. It was very thirsty. Of course, this would have been too if you used it the way it was intended to be. But,
sure.
But the 454 was a little bit more of a hit because it was a truck. Just like the Ford Lightning could do truck stuff. You can't do real truck stuff with a... Well, who would with this? I mean, you're not going to go to Home Depot and put 2x4s in the back.
I would.
But I'm also not going
to. I'm not going to
tow a car trailer with it because it won't. But
but
I would absolutely use this for around for what I use a truck for. This would do it. You know, my truck, my half ton Titan is wretched overkill for most of the things I need a truck for.
Yeah, so that's true for basically everybody who owns a truck in this country.
Unfortunately, yes. But it's been true since, you know, basically the Maverick is the salvation, and they are selling all of them they could make.
Well, that's an interesting point you made. If they made this today for $52,000 or whatever it would be, I don't think I would go out and buy one, but a lot of people would because they don't buy new stuff. But as a general rule.
Okay, so Alan just mentioned the Maverick. They sell a turbocharged four-cylinder version, all-wheel drive of the Maverick. I would be curious, and I'm sure I could find this out, but if you took that specific truck and applied a suspension package to it and put sticky tires on it, how close it would be to the Cyclone in performance?
You'd have to turn the wick up a little bit on the boost, but they're not slow.
But they okay, are, so they that's 275 horsepower.
250, I think. But they're stock, they're 6 seconds to 60, and I wanna say they're like a 14.8.
Yeah.
They're not slow, but they're not quite the same level.
But I would be willing to bet that if you threw a set of sticky tires on it and maybe went with a lower ratio to effectively increase your
gear ratio.
Your gearing.
Yeah.
It might get pretty close.
You'd get closer.
So the S10 platform is something I'm kind of fond of myself. You know, the Cyclone was built on was the S10 and S15/Sonoma platform. They're just that was another, I feel like, parts bin design GM. And I don't know the background and didn't get into it, how they conceived the S10, but they needed what they called at the time a quarter ton pickup truck, and they used the metric midsize or G body front suspension. You know, it's the same control arms
and
spindles as on my Malibu and Regal projects. They're a little narrower. They use a leaf spring rear end. I mean, it's a pretty simple design. Not bad little trucks. They're not great trucks, but they're handy.
Well,
I mean, what is they're not great as a truck if you need a truck, but if you need to get shavings for the horse stall home from Tractor Supply, they do real good, I know, because they do it at least once a week. My wife driving our little Sonoma.
Well, that begs the question, though, what qualifies a good truck?
Yeah.
Because
depends on what you need at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that 80%+ of truck stuff, a Sonoma or an S10 or a Ranger is perfectly good at, because it's you're bringing straw home to cover the yard after you seed it. You're bringing mulch home. You're collecting 2x4s or whatever. Like, a 6-foot bed's going to be fine for that. Hell, as we talked about, most full size trucks don't have a 6-foot bed anymore. Most are 5.5 or
something. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, a pickup truck's not very great for hauling lumber anymore. You need a trailer because the beds aren't that long unless you're getting short boards.
Or you you go out and find yourself a 20-year-old Astro cargo van with a 9.5-foot length from the doghouse all the way to the rear doors. I've hauled lots of long stuff in that.
And so
several tall kids he kidnapped.
But only if they lay down. If they stand up, they run right into the ceiling. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that they started with this concept, as I jokingly said, of answering a question nobody asked, but they were done building the Grand Nationals, and this guy wanted to keep building turbocharged, high-performance, kind of offbeat stuff, and so glad they did. It's a great thing, and it gives me something to some inspiration to build a toy, project at some point, but our typical follow-up or typical question we do at the end is, would you buy one?
If I found one for a reasonable price, which is highly subjective, sure. I would love to own one, but I don't foresee that ever happening.
Right.
Likewise, they've never been affordable. When I was in high school, I can remember these were around, and you'd see one for sale for $7,000 or $8,000 every so often. Mm-hmm. I think that's as low as they ever dipped.
Probably.
Yeah. And when I was in high school, they might as well have been $70,000. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I even knew what these were in high school. I only ran across them at a later time. I don't know. Because I'm not certain I've ever seen one.
They only made 3,000 of the Cyclone.
Right.
That's not very many.
No.
And I saw a few whenever I grew up in Kansas City. There were probably a few running around there.
I saw a Typhoon new on a dealer lot because my dad slammed on the brakes. He knew what it was. Slammed on the brakes, pulled in to look at it.
Yeah. Well, for me, would I buy it? No. I would love to own one, but I'm way more. It's just too valuable. And I've already said it.
That's probably kind of the same answer as me.
It is. Would we want to own one? Yes. Mm-hmm. Am I going to buy it? No. It's not reasonable. Sure. I'm not going to find one now. Yes. If a great deal fell in my lap, I'd buy it, and then I'd probably feel guilty driving the thing because it's such a time capsule. They're neat, but so no, I probably won't own one. But I do have bench build thoughts about, recreating something similar, but in my own style. And then while I always knew that the key to a roll your own Cyclone or Typhoon was that Bravada transfer case. And I never really thought too much about all wheel drive Astro vans and Safari vans until I was looking into this a little bit. And I decided one wacky off the wall build would be to do another tropical storm build with an all wheel drive Astro or Safari and forced induction. That would be.
I hate to tell you this, but I think Faster with Finnegan did it like 8 months ago.
Great. That's perfect.
They turbocharged an all-wheel drive Astro, and they put the turbos in like the rear glass area, so you had to open the rear glass. I do know GMC has done several all-wheel drive V8 trucks and SUVs, so that could be an even more durable and those are starting probably to, more like
the available. The Denalis were all-wheel drive for a long time.
So, yes, we've exhausted our conversation opportunities on the GMC Cyclone/Typhoon platform.
Yeah, Cyclones.
Very cool. Too low production for any of us to actually ever hope to own.
Make some more GMC.
Yeah.
Get on it.
I got you with the black and the forced induction.
Oh, yeah.
I
was
like, I'm going to mislead you guys. And you're like, what? Don't say that. And then I said, black, forced induction.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out when Henry put forced induction on a Model T. And I'm like, I don't ever think that was factory.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not even rear wheel drive. It's got none of my trifecta, but all wheel drive is not worse than
rear wheel drive. And it was rear biased. It's a rear wheel. So that was a good one, Alex. I think that, yeah, that it was a unique vehicle that we all were at least familiar with. So good choice.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I just figured we'd have a good time talking about it, and I learned a little bit about it in the process of this. And, yeah, I think it's a good one. One of us will come up with a good one next week, and we'll have fun again.
This has been Junk Connoisseurs.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.
So apropos of nothing, I've been walking around smelling garlic bread all day today, and I'm not sure if I'm having a stroke or just really hungry. Well, it's about to be Olive Garden's problem, not mine.